You can watch and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Matt Walsh, Chris Roseborough, Greg Kokel, Hans Feeney, and Katie Faust at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. The $135 registration fee includes both live and on-demand viewing. For more information and to register, visit issuesetc.org or give us a call 618-223-8385. Simply doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to it. One moment, they're pulling down statues of Confederate heroes. The next minute, it's a statue of Thomas Jefferson or of a priest or even of abolitionists. There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to the destruction of monuments here in the United States. Does it have anything to do with cancel culture more generally? Joining us to talk about cancel culture and the destruction of monuments, Alexander DeSantis, visiting fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, staff writer for National Review, and author of a recent column titled In Defense of Saints and Statues. Alexandra, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Great to be with you, Todd.
Why have protesters and rioters been targeting statues and monuments?
You know, we've seen a lot of explanations for why these things have been happening. I think the sort of root cause of it all is a lot of people are very angry. Of course, they started out being angry about the unjust murder of George Floyd, but I think it's kind of spiraled out of control at this point, and a lot of angry people are just looking for reasons to tear things down, and sometimes they have better justifications than others for why they might dislike one statue or another. But I think really at the heart of the issue is that there are a lot of angry people, perhaps pent-up anger about shutdowns and the coronavirus pandemic, and it's all sort of spilling over into this unfortunate mob violence.
How do you respond to the justification for this kind of vandalism, which sometimes takes the form of, well, statues aren't history?
Yeah, this is a claim I've seen quite a bit, especially from people, you know, kind of younger Americans, people who are my age, saying statues aren't history, so of course we can take them down. It's okay to rip them down if we want to. And I think the first and most important response is, well, perhaps there might come a time when we revisit some of the monuments we've put up, think of reasons why they might need to go to a museum for one reason or another. But that's different from justifying mob rioting to tear them down when we don't like them. This is a democratic country. We resolve things by debate, by agreement. We don't, you know, go out under the cover of night and start ripping things down when we don't like them. That's not a civilized response to things we disagree with. So first of all, it's a problem with mob violence, but it's also a problem, I think, with just a misunderstanding of history by a lot of these people who are doing the rioting.
You say the problem with the anti-statue campaign isn't a problem merely with mob rule as such. What else is the problem?
Right. So that's what I was hinting at kind of at the end of my last response there. I think, you know, it's not just that I oppose mobs running around tearing things down when they don't like them, which is obviously a problem. But I think, unfortunately, what we've seen is this sort of indiscriminate urge to tear things down is devoid of any kind of reasoning. So, you know, the fact that people are tearing down statues of Frederick Douglass, perhaps the most famous abolitionist in our country's history, in the name of racial justice, says to me that some of these people are not thinking through history, not thinking through who these men and perhaps women are before they go to tear them down. They're not putting people in their proper context or explaining their reasoning for opposing the statues. They're just kind of looking to tear things down.
Why have the mobs been targeting statues of Father Junipero Serra?
So he is a priest and a Catholic saint who founded a number of Catholic missions in California when it still belonged to Spain. And he has been the target of some of the mob outrage in California specifically because protesters say that he's sort of a symbol of the genocide of indigenous people. And this doesn't really ring true. You know, no one has produced any evidence that he was involved in any kind of genocide. In fact, quite the opposite. He built up these communities for Native Americans. He helped them learn more modern methods of agriculture. He even drafted a Bill of Rights on their behalf and brought it to the viceroy of the area in Mexico City, you know, walked on foot to bring it to them. So the idea that he was oppressing these people, I think, is a little bit far-fetched, but nevertheless, he's become kind of the target of the Justice for Native American Genocide movement.
So it appears at the very least that what we're dealing with here is perhaps ignorance, but maybe even willful ignorance of the history that is attached to many of these monuments.
That seems to be the case. And I think, you know, we've seen this. Ulysses S. Grant was one of the people who was toppled. I know at least one statue of George Washington has been attacked. There was a big uproar over the Emancipation Memorial here in Washington, D.C., which depicts Abraham Lincoln standing over a recently emancipated freedman, you know, former slave. And I think in most of these cases, rather than having sort of a reasoned discussion about what some people might dislike about these monuments, there's this urge either to, you know, use violence to outright take them down or to come up with kind of false reasoning that seems to justify taking them down when in reality, in context, most of these men, I think, are rightly judged as American heroes.
You say that the vandalism of statues isn't really about acknowledging the deficiencies of leaders past. What is it about, Alexandra?
You know, I do think part of it is just this kind of latent anger that a lot of people have about, you know, rightly in a lot of cases, racism that still exists in this country or a lack of racial justice or instances of police brutality. But I don't think that it's spurring people to make an honest reckoning with deficiencies in our own history. You know, if you're going to tear down Frederick Douglass, as I said, in the name of racial justice, clearly you're not thinking through the issue of racism or, you know, where Black people in America are today. You're just looking for reasons to be angry about something. And while it's all well and good to be upset about injustice, I think a much more constructive way to go about that would be to look at the problems we have, to debate policies that might be helpful rather than targeting these men that more often than not really did quite a bit to aid the cause of racial equality.
What do you make of lawmakers and public officials who have been quick to kind of jump on the bandwagon and either turn a blind eye toward the destruction of monuments or in some cases approve of statue vandalism?
You know, it's really frustrating, and this is something I referenced in my column, because after several of these statues of Father Junipero Serra were taken down by mobs, they have not been put back up. Local officials have not, you know, gestured at all towards putting them back up. And in at least one county in California, the local city council is mulling over formally removing one monument, I guess, before the mob could get to it. And I think this is sort of a willingness to concede to just the mob mentality of, well, if a large enough group of really angry people are going to go out and riot in the streets and do these sorts of things, we'd better go along so they don't get mad at us. And I really don't think that's what leaders ought to do. You know, they have a role in tempering these sorts of movements and saying, here's the historical context, here's who these men were. And if we want to have a sort of local community discussion about whether these statues belong here, let's do that in a reasoned way. You can bring your reasons forward. People who disagree can have their say, and then we'll decide as a community what to do. But these kind of violence-driven policies, I guess, are not the answer.
How does the destruction of statues and monuments fit into the bigger context of cancel culture?
It seems to me like what we often have talked about over the last few years as the college campus culture, something that really originated on college campuses over the last decade, I guess, sort of spilling out into the public square, where we have these people who think that if they're loud enough, if they're angry enough, if they display superior force, they can just go out there and get what they want. They don't have to present a compelling reason. They don't have to listen to the other side of the argument. In fact, they can silence the other side of the argument entirely and just sort of get their way because they're loud enough. And I think these men who are displayed in these monuments as examples of some of the finest leaders in our history really do deserve better than that kind of cancellation.
When it comes to monuments that may need to be reconsidered, and I'm thinking here perhaps about Confederate monuments, although they also do serve as an historical warning in some ways, how do we go about having a public conversation of the kind you're discussing here, where we could say, let's talk about why that statue was put up in the first place and whether or not that reason is still reasonable?
My general sense is that by and large, these things ought to happen at the local level. So I remember when a lot of this started, these sorts of issues started bubbling up over, as you say, Confederate monuments. Over the last couple of years, some calls came to have governors just take down any statue that might be offensive. And in my view, I think each local community is a much better forum for those kinds of discussions, because you can have, you know, we all have better access to the people who directly represent us right in our area than we do to even our representative in Congress. And I think each community understands best what the monument was there for and whether or not they think it's serving a purpose anymore. So in my view, I think that's probably the best place for that to happen.
Can those objectionable monuments serve as kind of warning markers in American history as well?
My sense is some of these, maybe Confederate monuments in particular, could be better off in a museum, because that museum is where we consider history, and there's less of a sense that we might be honoring somebody who was a rebel against the Union. And so museums seem to be a good alternative, where we're not just totally destroying or memory-holing somebody, but we're also not, someone wouldn't think we're honoring them in the public square, but I don't want that to extend to someone like Abraham Lincoln or Ulysses S. Grant.
Since you mentioned museums, Alexandra, I have heard people at least worry privately about the fact that it doesn't stop with the statues, that there may be a call for removing images, paintings, sculptures inside art museums or history museums. What are your thoughts on that?
I certainly wouldn't be surprised if that happened. You know, unfortunately, while I want to look at this in a reasonable way, and I certainly concede there are some historical figures I wouldn't want being honored, I also think people on the sort of far left and the other side of this debate are not looking to make any compromise. And it feels like if you give them an inch here, they'll run a mile with it. And so I am hesitant in that sense. But I do think on a principled basis, a museum is certainly something to consider for those of us looking at this in a more rational way.
Alexandra DeSanctis is visiting fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, staff writer for National Review, and author of a recent column titled In Defense of Saints and Statues. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Alexandra, thank you.
Thanks very much.
In hour two of Issues Etc., we're going to be continuing our series, The Words of Scripture, continuing a conversation on the word priest, this time in the New Testament. Pastor Will Wheaton will be our guest.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com. churchmusicsolutions.com.